Mindfulness is a fun one to explore. it's become like a trending word, but mindfulness, or kind of what I've summed it up, is how much are you listening, and how much are you listening from trying to not throw your own judgments or assumptions at someone? We're born with 2 ears, 1 mouth, so we need to be doing twice the listening than we do talking. Mm. And that's for internet, that's for family, that's from friends. You meet anyone, like you see something, you hear something, you're with someone. Am I listening and throwing my stuff on them? Or am I just really just listening and just hearing them for where they are? Mm-hmm. Everyone comes from different places and has different backgrounds and has different ideas of what the world looks like and experiences. Mm. And I think it's first trying to honor where someone's at.
What's up, y'all? Trevor here with the Carrot Cast. And I've got an interesting and very meaningful and impactful departure on today's episode. This isn't going to be an episode where we talk about leads. It's not going to be an episode where we talk about building authority and anything having to do with real estate. It's really at the heart and some of the utmost, most important things that we should and could be focusing on in life. And we're going to talk about legacy a little bit. We're going to talk about a story of an amazing individual that a friend and team member here at Carrot, Joaquin Ortiz, you're going to be introduced to here in a second, that is near and dear to him, and some circumstances recently that I think are something we want to shed light on. That there's so much negativity that can creep out there in the world right now. It's so easy for people to hide behind the veil of the internet to go out there and really attack people. And I don't think it's okay. And we want to be able to use our platform here to really help shine a light on the positive sides of legacy and of people, and specifically this one amazing individual. But we're going to dig into some important stuff. So I want you to bolt on here. And also, I've got a major call to action. There's going to be a major call to action in the middle and or towards the end of this episode that I think can really impact you for the rest of your life and those around you if you're game to take the call. So I'm going to introduce you guys to Joaquin first of all, but I'll give you guys a quick background after the introduction. But welcome on your first ever episode of the Carrot Cast, but hopefully not the last, Joaquin.
Oh man, this is kind of a treat to be here, because even before I joined Carrot, I'm like, oh, let's see, who is this Trevor Mott guy and his podcast? And I'm like, oh, here we are now in the hot seat.
I love it. So we're going to give people a little bit of context. Joaquin joined the Carrot team, this past year and a half now. Time flies, man, but you've been with us over a year and buzzing towards the second year right now. And we're hot off the heels of our most recent company retreat. Every 6 months, we bring the whole team out here to Oregon and get together. And that's kind of where this podcast came out of, as we were sitting down there near the beach in Oregon and just kind of chatting about it. Joaquin was inspired to come up with this topic. And it's really cool because in Carrot, one of the things that Joaquin is so amazing at, that we want to be able to light up that part of him even more within the company. It makes it a little bit more difficult being remote, but we still want to find amazing things to do it, is he always finds ways to really bring us back to center. You know, at our retreat, he was doing yoga out there on the beach that we did several days, and it was really, really fun in the mornings. He's had other exercises that he's led that really help us connect with each other. And that's one thing that I've found, man, is when you get out of that comfort zone, sometimes talk about uncomfortable things and you challenge some of those things you hold near and dear to yourself, you can find a greater version of yourself. And there's going to be some things we're going to be challenging today from those of you guys listening to this episode. There's going to be things that we're going to be challenging to those of you who maybe are doing some of the things we're going to be talking about, both in the positive and negative side. But Joaquin, I'm so grateful for you. So why don't you give people a quick kind of recap on your background? How did you come, like, what did you do before Carrot? What are some of the passions you've got? Why did you join Carrot? And then we'll shift gears towards your uncle's story.
Yeah, of course. Hello to everyone out there who I've ever emailed or live chatted with or done a strategy call with. But yeah, I joined Carrot about a little over a year ago. And prior to that, oh man, I've definitely been a passion chaser in my world. Big time runner, which is one corner of how a lot of people know me. Ran for Cal Poly Pomona, made it on the big stage of some of the big leagues there, and trained with Olympic people who ran in the Olympics. So it was just a treat for me, like going from small town high school runner, to, wow, I'm seeing my training partners and sometimes stepping in races with them and they're fast. Wait, I'm kind of fast too now. When did that happen? So that's been a fun journey. And then moving on and giving back after my running career, coaching at University of Portland high school. And that's a blast. If mm-hmm. you find a passion, something you love, but your body can't quite hold up or something changes, there's always an opportunity and a way to give back and teach others so that fire can continue through others. And that's a blast. So that was me for a while, or one of my cornerstones. The other one's been a lot of music, not only music performing, but just seeing what it's like when there's magic in anything. When you get a good group of people on the same wave of the energy or the tone. And in my case, that was a lot of music festival stuff, starting small and then working my ranks to, I was in the backstage, part of some of the biggest music festivals in the US, ranging from Coachella to Rock the Bells, which is a big hip hop one. And I was a hip hop head myself. So here I am as a kid listening to anyone from like Mos Def or any of these guys. I'm like, oh, these are amazing. And now I consider them colleagues. Yeah. So that was really just chasing passion, being in the right place at the right time and just doing honest work. My interned my butt off to get in those positions. Paid off to be on tour. And so that's kind of a good chunk of my time and my past cornerstones of music and fitness. And now I've developed my own brands or my own ways of trying to give back and how to go inward and understand oneself better. And I think that's, I'm bringing a lot of that to Carrot, especially in the streets. We have a blast doing that. And then having my own projects of being branded as Coach Joaquin, whether that kind of stepped in the accident, but mm-hmm. using music and bridging my coaching and doing music mixes that are fitness mixes. That was just a byproduct of, I got tired of doing Pandora and having a commercial pop in right in the middle of an intense portion of a workout. So learned how to play mixed music from the people I was around, and that's become its own world and a brand that I'm carrying today and having a blast with.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. So guys, like Joaquin said, many of you guys have hopped on phone calls with him here at Carrot and have bounced emails back and forth. So he's probably the guy or one of the guys you're going to talk to on a strategy call if you're an investor. So look out for Joaquin, but we're going to make a shift here. And I'll kind of introduce this and toss over to Joaquin. This was, you know, a couple months ago from the time that we're recording this around there mm-hmm. that Joaquin hit me up and just kind of walked through a tragedy that his family had. And the more that we got to talk and the more that I saw things unfold, the more, man, like I'm kind of searching for the right word, but the more sad, bummed, disappointed that I am that the world has made it so much easier to do this today than it was in the past. And the high level of the tragedy is Joaquin, one of his main mentors in life, one of his running inspirations, a family member, an uncle, Dr. Frank Meza, who's a world-class runner, recently was massively cyberbullied, and we'll kind of go into a little bit of it here. And it led to, it led to him taking his own life. And that's, I don't know what other way to say it, but it's not easy to talk about. And we think it's a really important topic to bring up. Like I said, we hope that you guys stick with us here and dive in on this, because whether you've experienced this or not, or whether you've done it to others, or whether you have kids, it's something that we need to know how to deal with. And so I'm going to toss over to you, Joaquin, and kind of where do you want to start this, man? Do we want to dive into your uncle's story? Kind of where do you want to start it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you framed it up pretty well. We can just go straight into Dr. Frank Meza, or Theo Frank, as I call him. Mm-hmm. I think it's appropriate to talk about legacy going into this, because here is someone who lived a hell of a life. coming from the story of coming to just him and his mom coming to the US, the whole immigrant story. He lost his dad as a kid, and it was just him and his mom. He got introduced to doctors that are other Latinos that he could relate to in the 60s. And some point in time, someone planted the seed that you can be a doctor too. And he had no idea what that meant. He's like, oh yeah, okay, I can do that. And he went and did it, from becoming from an immigrant to being disenfranchised, low income, just it's stacked against them mm-hmm. to put it, just frame it up quickly. Mm-hmm. But in the 60s, 70s, the era that they're weren't many Latino doctors. He was one of very few, and recognizing there needs to be more of this, started programs in East LA to try to serve and inform other Latinos that they can be out there. They can be what they want. It doesn't matter where they come from. You can be a little bit, he's happy to mentor them. And in the process, what took them. And at that same time, he was a huge runner. That was his medicine, his meditation, and the cornerstone of how I remember him. He also started a project, still alive today. I think it started in the 70s, and I'm still finding shirts and people in contact, which is blowing me away.
Did you get that shirt that we were talking about? That is so cool. Oh,
yeah. So the Aslan Running Club, started in the 70s, and it was just to get people involved in health, in track and field, or just running in general, but track and field was his jam back then. So he started a running club, and still goes on the day. And as I was searching upon his death, just that running club, I found a shirt on Etsy that was someone found in Portland. So I got to pick it up in person, or had my girlfriend pick it up. So, from the 1980s, still in mint condition, and it's imprinted in my mind, my dad wearing that shirt when I was a kid. And
really?
And now I have my own, and it fits perfect. Of course it does.
And I'm like, that's crazy.
It's a trip. But yeah, that just speaks to how much running it was from. So the Aslan Track Club, he's carried that for years, and became a coach at Loyola High School with one of his friends who was a head coach and a high school teacher. And this is all volunteer time. He coached for 20 plus years, leading the top runners again and again for cross country and track. And some of them have moved on to Olympic level competitions, which I'm like, that's the caliber he could coach at. So he did that all volunteer. As a side gig from being a physician, if that's not enough. Lisa say fitness was a cornerstone of him. Here is someone in their 50s and 60s, as I was embarking on running, doing 60K trail runs, jumping in Ironmans and doing 100-mile bike ride, just the absurd things that that I see others in 50s and 60s year olds just don't have the body, but you have the drive to do that.
But most are like mentally winding down at that point, you know, like most are going, well, my best years are behind me. I'm kind of going to wind down. But that sounds like he was an amazing example for someone who didn't take that. He's like, well, why should we have to wind down? Let's see if we can't keep on pushing.
Absolutely. He spoke his medicine of you know, as a forefront runner, at least in the LA area, trying to be, reduce that was his personal mission, to reduce diabetes. So he's like, you can just run. You don't need a fancy gym membership or anything like that. Let's start right with our backyard. So he definitely took that to heart and then some. But I do know, like, a fun time for him being a well traveler and taking time off. He loved his Tour de France. He flew over there with his bike, would bike portions of the course before they would do it, then watch the bikers have a beer and then repeat it the next day. Like, that was vacation for him.
It was fun for him. That's cool.
Yeah. I was just like, okay. In my mind, I'm like, okay. Yeah. That's a fun way to explore. So I think I adapted that whenever I travel somewhere. I always learn the lay of the land by just going for a run through the neighborhood. Not necessarily biking 60 miles through the foothills of who knows what. Teach their own, but at the very least, go explore new territory. But that's how he lived. He lived as being active. And as he was getting into his 60s, he started jumping into half marathons and marathons, just try something new. And inspiration, I think, from a little bit of the spiritual side of an understanding. Oh gosh, I'm gonna botch this name up. The Tarahumara Indians, the ones that tribe that can just—it's in their nature just to run.
Yep.
And so he just kind of took a note of that, and like, I think I can just keep going and taking everything he knows about running and building his own training programs, and took on a lot of other people. People would pay just to learn how to run through him. Just started running, became awesome at it again and again, and. Me being a college runner, I'd go for a few of these runs, especially with these high school athletes. And you do some gnarly ones, just straight up, oh, we're going to run this hill for the next 2 miles. It just straight up. And my goal, like me being cocky, I'm like, I can hang with this. And then towards after a mile into it, I look back and he's creeping up on my heels. And my goal just became not to have him pass me. Yeah. But he's got some gnarly train runs that I remember knocking out with him and the team, which to the caliber of the team, it made sense. Okay. That's we're doing work, heavy lifting work. Mm. Which that reflected his times or how he trained. And he just steadily became in his 60s, just an amazing runner. Mm-hmm. Consistently being a top placer. I'm flashbacking to being at my aunt's house a few weeks ago and just seeing just litters of medals that all started just in the last 10 years of,
yeah.
of Ironmans, half marathons, marathons. And he was in a little league of his own. Mm-hmm. But over time, there were those who started getting suspicious of this guy's going too fast. This guy's doing too much. This isn't line up. And accusations, I think just started just a few years ago, or at least the pieces, at least when you look online, that's where the first things are surfacing of individuals accusing him of cheating. Mm-hmm. And they all have their own kind of ideas of how things happened, disqualified from races here and there. Which him, he didn't do it for glory. Mm. He did it because he just loved it. And that's how I know him. He wasn't one who boasted anything. He wasn't fancied about having big cars or fancy or big houses, fancy cars. There we go. wasn't his nature. So it made sense as he'd be disqualified from race or people review or things didn't line up. He never challenged it. He's mm-hmm. like, okay, well, I ran, I had my fun. Cool. And that, in my mind, that's what Thanksgiving and Christmas would come out. There'd be races or big races before or prior. We'd go knock it out and then come back and be with the family, have fun. Mm-hmm. But over time, those got steadily louder, especially as he started pressing and got the course records and world records for certain races. Mm-hmm. It got loud real fast and people piecing up their own ideas of what's going on. And then two websites in particular came up, and this is kind of where we start seeing the ugly side of the internet. Mm-hmm. Let'srun.com, which I remember from my being a runner myself, it's just a big forum, online forum boards, topic based. And then Marathon Investigations, which is a self-proclaimed investigator who loosely tied to running, loosely runners in that world, mm-hmm. whose personal mission is to uncover or do marathon investigations and uncover the cheaters of the world.
Yeah.
Those two kind of teamed up and started going after my uncle and piecing up things, which... I'm not big on making my business someone else's business, but that's what it started coming down to the last few years, and these last few months especially, my uncle just became 70 and hit a different age group and started just the same things he was doing now. Now that he's in a different age group, he's hitting different record times, mm-hmm. so his name started surfacing to the headlines a little bit more, which started tripping more investigations, more people finding pictures and making and coming up with stories. I haven't dove too much into it. You can come up with your own suspicions, whatever it may be. In my mind, it's a 70-year-old is just running. Mm-hmm. And that got loud real fast. The allegations, as you can suspect with anything, become comments, become judgments, can become hateful mm-hmm. real fast. And my uncle doing the best to just kind of brush it off, not let it bother him. I'm just going to keep running. And it got big when the LA Marathon found some things to disqualify him on, which he didn't challenge. I remember like, okay, there are certain rules of my bib number was off or this and that. I stepped off the course to pee. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. And he also accepted... in the future, to have someone shadow him. So like, all right, let's just have this done. But all the moments leading up to that, YouTube or comments left and right getting ugly. He made the front page of the LA Times of his name, Dr. Frank Mesa, cheater. Mm. In my mind, Lance Armstrong didn't even get something that big.
Yeah.
And that's his hometown, being in LA. So to have your hometown newspaper, you're at the tier end of living your legacy, and that's what you're getting right now. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling it right now. Just that, yeah. That's breaking to the heart and the soul right there.
Oh man.
And, I do know the last few months, he just became tired. That was kind of the theme of like, I'm just tired, which if you can translate that to I'm carrying something that it's heavy.
Yeah.
And as I kind of dove in some of the internet stuff, it's bad comments, it's bad allegations, and not even respecting the character of my uncle being just a huge giver. And it's clearly none of these people met him. Leading up to the LA Times front page, that spun to, I'm thinking ahead to July-ish, early July. There's now news reporters up in literally the front yard of trying to get stories and pictures, cameras pointed at their bedroom window, that whole deal of like, he's not one that even asked for a spotlight.
Yeah.
But here they are, people coming up with their stories and wanting to see and get their glimpse of him. And really tiring for him. And on July 4th, he woke up and had their plans to just do the July 4th stuff in the front yard as they normally do. Mm-hmm. And he decided to go for a run. And my aunt was already kind of suspicious. He's tired. There's something going on. Mm. A month prior, that he was told he has to have open heart surgery, which is that's a mind boggle in itself. Wow. If you're an athlete and you're told you need to have heart surgery. And then everything going on of needing to prove himself innocent in a world where he's like, I don't even care of all these things going on. Just let me run. He decided to go for a run, which my aunt encouraged, just being, you know, that sounds good. Mm-hmm. Get outside. Go do what you love. Go for a run. He drove off to the neighborhood he grew up in, which wasn't far from where he lived now. Mm. Parked the car, left a little note for the family through video. I haven't dove in it entirely, but I know what the essence of it is.
Yeah.
And found a bridge and made his peace right there.
Oh, man.
And within hours, I found out, family found out, and it doesn't make sense. Mm-mm. To a degree it does, but the theme, to I understand it, of everything leading up, the allegations, and people started poking personally in his life. Mm-hmm. People started calling his work, telling the world or telling the workplace that he's a dishonest man. You can't have this doctor here. Mm. People actively trying to make life hard for my uncle. Mm. And that he was very, very concerned, as I think everyone can relate to, what does that mean from your family? It doesn't take much for a few clicks, a few searches to find one individual and everyone in their surrounding circle.
Yeah.
And that was the impact here. And my family leading up to those events, doing what they could to push back on the comments, hiring a firm to kind of clean up things, but they're fighting a tsunami at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way to frame it, of when things go viral, when things in the internet have made up their mind, it's a tsunami. It doesn't matter what you put out. Mm. And that's what they're doing at that point, which it wasn't working. And especially with people actively engaging and getting involved in his life, it seems my uncle's best decision at that point, despite doing all these efforts, there's no laws to protect us. You know, there are consequences and laws if you yell fire in a theater. Yeah. Or if you yell certain things in an airport, there are consequences to that. And if there's a mob in your front yard, you have a phone number to call. There's people you can help you. Mm-hmm. We don't have that for the internet. What happened here is my uncle needed to protect his family. And I think, or one of the things I think, other than just carrying hate directed at him. He became a target for the internet.
And this topic, I mean, it's obviously crazy tough. And first of all, I'm sorry that your family's had to go through this. It's something I can't say. I know what you feel like. It's something I can't say, you know, I can't give specific guidance on how to wade through something like this, nor can most, but, yeah. It's something that I think all of us are going to increasingly, encounter these things as we go. And we want to talk about a couple of these things. We want to honor your uncle's legacy, first of all, an amazing runner, an amazing man, by all accounts that I've seen and heard. And like you said, guys, here's the thing. I really don't care what the facts are in it. I trust Joaquin in that side. What I care about is there's a human being in this that no matter what people's conclusions are, whether they're true, false, any of that stuff doesn't matter to me. What matters is there's a human being that people start to attack with little to no gain for themselves other than to throw hatred at people. And yeah. No one wins in that scenario. But we've come into a society these days where, let's flip it back to the real estate side, right? Where you'll see someone having a bunch of success in a Facebook group, and then you get as many people hating on them for posting their success as people encouraging them. And all too often we see so many people attacking one's success or attacking one's opinion or attacking one's current stance or their looks or the way that they talk, or like you can go on and on about any of that stuff. And there needs to be a lot more encouraging of people. And the thing with the internet, and we've got podcasts here, and you're listening to this connected to an internet device, is it's almost made it to where we've removed humanity from the equation of communication so much that if you were to pull this back 70 years ago, you wouldn't have that happening because most people wouldn't have the guts to say those things to someone's face. But when you have the humanity removed from the conversation, and I can just with a little username or behind this, the veil of this blog where the person can't actually really come and find me physically, you have a lot more gumption to say things that are very hurtful that you probably would not say, and you would hold back in a real life conversation. So we want to talk about a few things there. I know you're really big on mindfulness, and it's on my notes here if you want to dive into that. But What are some things, if any of us are guilty of flipping to the negative, or if we see it, what are some things that we can do to be more mindful of other people, but also if we are at the attacked end of this, is there anything that we can do just with all the training and learning that you've been learning lately?
Mindfulness is a fun one to explore. it's feels like it's become like a trending word, but mindfulness, or kind of what I've summed it up, is how much are you listening, and how much are you listening from trying to not throw your own judgments or assumptions at someone? Just, you know, we're born with 2 ears, 1 mouth. So we need to be doing twice the listening than we do talking. Mm. And that's for internet. That's for family. That's from friends. You meet anyone. Like, you see something, you hear something, you're with someone. Am I listening and throwing my stuff on them? Or am I just really just listening and just hearing them for where they are? Mm-hmm. Everyone comes from different places and has different backgrounds and has different ideas of what the world looks like and can experiences. Mm. And I think it's first trying to honor where someone's at. There's that Tony Robbins, a little clip of, or I think it was someone mentioned the story, the idea of there's an individual on a subway watching two others, and this guy's down, or this guy's just heads down, and he has his kids just rambling, doing crazy, and the guy's watching him, snaps on him, goes, "Hey, can you take care of your kids here? There's wild running wild." Mm-hmm. And the individual looks at him and goes, like, "Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, but they just lost their mom, and I'm not too sure how to take it, and I guess they don't know either." Mm-hmm. And in that situation, if you were to snap on one in that situation, you'd feel like trash.
Oh yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Process, be where you need to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's just a great example of what it means to, you know, you this needs to look a certain way, but mm-hmm. you don't know what's on that end. You don't know what's going on. And so mindfulness is the idea of how much are you listening to someone and being able to recognize what is my projection or judgment versus just recognizing that's where they're at.
Yep. Yep. And there's a big part of it too, man, that kind of even going back to Dr. Frank's story here is, it's like there's the mindfulness of listening to, like you said, where they're at, which likely, many of the people spewing the hatred likely didn't. They formed their opinions very early on, and then they were going to stick to them. And once again, it doesn't matter to me in this case, the facts. What matters to me is going back to going, okay, cool. Did that person actually, number one, give them the benefit of the doubt? Number two, let's think about mindfulness as far as how we then communicate back to people, right? Mm-hmm. Is going, okay, is it constructive or destructive, the communication I'm about to have? And it's funny, I've got three little kids. They're four, six, and eight. And we were talking about this on Sunday this week, where Colton, my little boy, he's in the middle, he's six, and he's in a little phase where he likes to kind of jab at his sisters a little bit. You know, if the sister likes this thing, this little whatever tiara, he thinks it's dumb, right? And like we're talking to him, and he said that on the way back. I can't remember what it was, but one of his sisters had this thing that they liked, but it was on the ground and they couldn't reach it because they were buckled in the car. And Colton goes, "Oh, that thing's," what did he say? He goes, "Oh, that thing's kind of dumb anyway." And I talked to Colton and I said, "Colt," I go, "man, first of all, you might think it's dumb, but your sisters really like it. And so would you like that if one of your sisters said it about the toy that you're holding right now that you really like that you just got for your birthday?" And he goes, "Well, no, I wouldn't." I go, "Okay, cool. So let's make sure that we recognize, are your words dragging someone down, or are they building someone up? And if you're ever going to say anything that drags someone down, you should just think about it and cast it aside and don't say it. Only say things that build people up." Now, I know it's tempting. I know sometimes you want to make a point, right? You want to make a point sometimes. And sometimes we get dragged into that, into that destructive path of, I want to make a point doing this. It is going to be destructive, but me making my point is more important than the destruction that might have caused on the other side. And I want all of us to think about that more, is us making our point, and that little, injection of ego that we're going to get for a half second, is that more important than the destruction that we're likely going to have on the other side? And I think 9.99999 times out of 10, the answer is no. And let's pull back in that, and let's help coach our kids in a way. Let's grow another generation that's going to be more mindful. Let's grow a generation that's going to build up, not tear down. And let's just really get that out there more in the world in a big way. Social media, next thing on here, we talked a lot about just the spread of cyberbullying and how social media can amplify that. And I know one of our core values here at Carrot is be a beacon of positivity and possibility. And that's like, it's probably my favorite one. It's whenever I get dragged down, like even earlier today, Joaquin, I was on a big old content push, and then we kind of had a little snafu on something, and it wasn't even a big one at all. And I didn't care, but I kind of got dragged down energy wise, and I was getting a little bit negative in there. And so I had to pull back and go, okay, let me go outside, take a really quick walk, get some air, and let me just inject positivity and completely change my mood. But what's on your mind around cyberbullying, around social media, around what needs to change? And do you have any ideas on how people listening to this can be changed?
Damn, that's a big question.
It is. We're not going to solve it, but everyone here can play a part in their world of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Be the change you want to see. You know, it's funny. As I started researching the thing about cyberbullying, there are no laws really about it right now. That kind of made me sad. And well, here I'm experiencing part of the byproduct of that. Mm-hmm. And as I started searching around, it was just predominantly high school or young adults and kids that are experiencing cyberbullying, or at least the ones who on a position where a lot of energy is focused. Mm-hmm. And realistically, anyone can be a victim or experience cyberbullying. So by no means is it restricted to just a younger crowd, but I get it, since the younger crowd is very much engaged with the Snapchat and Instagram and all these stories where so many different things were just hyper connected, and it happens dang fast. And there are plenty of ugly stories where that's happened. That's going on. But there was one thing that stood out for me, which I think is applicable to social media as well as just in general. It's just framed a little differently. But the idea of if you're going to leave a post or send a message that's out in the public, do you feel comfortable with this being headline news on a front page? And I think just thinking of that, just change of perspective of you're leaving a digital footprint, you're leaving a message, you're leaving something that the world can see. Is that what you want to be seen as? Is that really what you want to say right now? Or is there something else you're trying to say and you're asking them this and it's really something else just coming out sideways and that's why you may be attacking someone? And I take a talk to everyone as if everyone's kind of a cyber bully here, but the idea of being to just take that moment and reframe or rethink what you're trying to say. And there's that saying of if you want to make the biggest speech you'll ever regret, say something when you're angry. And I think there's some truth to that, as opposed to, all right, let me just step away, or like you just mentioned, you know, I need to step outside. I need a refresher. I need a reset. I need to have some different stimulation to get my brain where I feel like it's more true to me.
Yep.
I need to sleep on it. There's all these other things, but now more than ever, with communication faster and more efficient, efficient, I suppose, than ever. Our words matter just a little bit more, since they don't really go away in the digital world.
And dude, and there's something too where I don't know what it is about it. I don't know if it's the volume of it. I don't know if it's the fact that other people can see it unless it's a DM. But for some reason, I mean, there's definitely a higher volume because there's a lower barrier, right? Like I said, there's a lower barrier of risk for the sender to send out something. Versus saying something in front of someone's face. And I guess if you were to look back, let's say 50 years ago or whatever, kind of the similar thing would have been the circle of kids in the playground chit-chatting about the person and kind of looking over their shoulder and pointing at them. But it's a small group, and not saying it wasn't hurtful. It was definitely hurtful. It's the same exact practice that they're doing. But it's a lot less prevalent. It was a lot less prevalent then because it was just the barrier of entry is higher. And that's just something, man, I just really encourage you guys. And we've got young kids coming up, you know, like I said, 4, 6, and 8. And it's definitely something that's on my mind a lot, that it's technology is an amazing thing, but also it's not. And as our kids kind of, you know, they'll like to pull out one of our phones and kind of watch a video or something like that. And I found a couple times where there's been a YouTube video that was a perfectly sensible YouTube video for a 6-year-old kid to watch, but then it rolls into something else that wasn't good at all. And so this is something where we've had to completely change the way that we treat screen time with our kids. And I don't know how it's going to happen 10 years from now when they're 16 years old and things like that, what technology is going to look like. But it's something I want all of you as parents to think about. It's more important than getting a deal. It's more important than getting a lead. It's more important than your career, than any of that stuff. But we pay attention to how our kids are interacting in social. Are they encouraging others? Are they tearing others down? And then also get a gauge for, I want to kind of toss this out, and I don't know if you'll have answers or not, but what are some of the warning signs if someone is likely experiencing being on the receiving end of that? You talked about some of those that your uncle had, but let's talk about that for a bit so we can maybe have some early warning signs if people listening to this they have kids or friends or family or people they care about. Joaquin, what are some of the early warning signs that people maybe could look out for if one of their loved ones is being cyberbullied?
By no means am I professional about it.
But your experience on the family side.
And I think this is a two-tier thing. Of the one tier of the individual, you know, you're experiencing some heavy stuff. And how do you communicate that of like, I'm feeling a lot of negative energy. I know at least I can relate to it as a notion being a male, the idea of, you know, you're not supposed to talk about emotions and this and that. So that's where the first tier of it's okay to speak out. Or figure out a way, who do you need to connect with to feel the comfort and just be guided and just reminded that you are an amazing person and that these comments, these likes or lack of likes or whatever it means, or thumbs down, I don't know, whatever platform you're on, by no means do they define you. But if that's where you're feeling, things are kind of determining what you're feeling, then kind of maybe that's a moment where like, okay, I need to come back and go into me a little bit and figure out to communicate or kind of get that idea of why is this making me feel heavy?
Mm-hmm.
And that could be something simple as your own energy audit of identifying those pools of where you get energy and where it's not so energetic.
Mm.
And as for those who are in watching the cyberbullying, there are things you can kind of say. I mean, at least in this age, I guess the latest I've seen, at least in YouTube and Facebook, the way to flag comments or things that are derogatory. All those different platforms have their own ways of trying to address it, which is great. They're doing what they can with the limited tools they have. Probably not going to stop it, but the idea of recognizing if something's wrong, if something is hateful, if something's just out there just to really not build someone up or just doesn't add value, then yeah, I think it's okay to flag it or question why that person or why that's there.
Mm-hmm.
And also try to be mindful of like, all right, where's this person coming from? If, you know, I've seen something around the Yelp, I see the person who's consistently doing 1-star reviews. Well, they one-star review everything. All right, then
yep.
It's probably going to be difficult to find for that person to find some appreciation in the world.
Oh yeah, they're going through some stuff and they're projecting on everyone else. And that's the thing I've learned too, man. Is usually the people that are out there spewing that garbage, they're going through their own crap in some way, shape, or form, and they're projecting it on you. And it's so unfortunate. It's so unfortunate that sometimes we get to a point to where we think we'll fix our stuff by bringing someone else down. There's a quote that Tony Robbins says that there's two ways to build the tallest building in town. You can tear down other people's buildings, or you can build the biggest building.
Yeah.
And so many people are more worried about tearing down other people's buildings to make theirs look taller versus working on themselves and just building a bigger building. And I think if there was anything I'd encourage all of you guys to do is really look around you, and whether it's in your business or whether it's the way that you're showing up to as a leader to your family, your friends, your community, your business, is how do you inspire others to build bigger buildings, not tear others down? How do you call out those, like you were saying, Joaquin, that you see tearing down, and see if you can encourage them and shine light to them to the fact that, hey, this isn't the way that's going to help you live the life that you think you're going to live by tearing others down. It's actually going to help you do the opposite of what you think. It's not going to help you be happier. It's probably going to help you not be happier. Shine that light. And then the next thing is resources. I know you're going to have a website up soon where people can learn about your uncle and your uncle's story. And if they'd like to support the cause, contribute to, what is the charity? What's the cause
So my uncle was really big on something called Altamed. I believe it's in East LA, established in early 1970s. But it's essentially recognizing, you know, it was at one point, I think to a certain degree, a free hospital in certain senses, and it's meant to target those who are disenfranchised, who don't have health access. And at least in LA, big Latino community, there's multiple barriers of what it means to have access to care and be informed of what's going on there. So Altamed is definitely on the forefront of being in communication with them, and he was very much a part of that and loved everything that they stood for, and he has a lot of heart and soul there. So the family in Altamed, they made us their own page and contributions rather than sending flowers, which my aunt has had living rooms full of. But they're asking to kind of continue to fund scholarships for students who are involved in Altamed or just wanting to serve communities that are not being served and getting the help they need.
Mm.
Donations are taking donations in his name.
Cool.
His name. And yeah, I'll have a button hooked up on that or a link something in this cast or website.
Awesome. So before I forget, what's the URL to your website so you can learn more about your uncle's legacy? Go and they'll find the link to that. What's the URL?
Yeah. So I have the website that I'm starting to take in the world of what it means to kind of be a little vulnerable or figure out the underlying story. It's been a little personal mission in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Is takingoffthearmor.com. And that's kind of my cornerstone of my project to what it means to be of service to someone who may be struggling with emotions or having patterns or limiting beliefs or just feels stuck. Mm. I've learned some amazing tools and super thankful in the last few years. And now I'm kind of cultivating that as a place. And then just the timing of things, the circumstances. And one of my personal missions the last few years is to kind of curb the number of men committing suicide, which is, I think, a 4-to-1 ratio, men to women. And that's been steady since the 1970s. So I've kind of thrown my hat with my own story of kind of being on those points of just depression. That's where taking off the armor is my own lessons and learnings and service to those who going through something. And okay, let's dig around and kind of make something more available that might be limiting right now.
Man, I appreciate you big time on this, man. I mean, you've taken off the armor in this podcast. You know, we're diving into a deeper topic, which I'm so glad that we have the platform to be able to do that and make whatever level of impact we're able to make here. We've got thousands of people who will access this and listen to this. And dude, here's my hope is this is. As like I said, the Caracast is usually, hey, let's help you build your business and have a better life. And we usually talk about the mindset stuff, but not in this angle. And I'm so glad we're bringing in some of these other topics and just no better way than to really honor the legacy of your uncle, you know, and we started this podcast with legacy, and I think we'll finish it with legacy that Go to takingoffthearmor.com. Is it taking off your armor or taking off the?
Taking off the armor.
The armor. Cool. Go to takingoffthearmor.com. Learn more about Dr. Frank Mason's legacy. But also what I want you guys to do is really recognize the amazing man that he is and that he was. Celebrate that and celebrate the accomplishments that you've just heard on this. And also what I want you guys to do is pull back and look at your own legacy, look at those around you, and how can you make sure that you're living your best life, that you are building your own legacy, not trying to tear others' legacies down. And I hope that your legacy is really a part of that, where at the end of your life, people really do look at you and go, man, look at all that person built. Look at all that person was a part of making great. Look at all that person did. Now we all make mistakes. There's so many things that I've done that I don't want on my tombstone, right? But they're not the things that will define me. They're not the things that will define who I am at the end of my life. And that's what I want you guys to focus on is, yes, we all make mistakes. Let's recognize those, cast them aside, and let's go, what is it that is the legacy that I'm going to be known for? And really focus on building that for you and for others. And like I said, we always say it, guys, to talk about the ripple effect, about the butterfly effect, that every single day, every one of us have a choice to show up to the world. We have a choice to leave a wake of destruction behind us by saying negative comments, by giving people weird looks, by being negative in general, even if it's not directed at a person, by just anything and everything. We can leave a wake of destruction, or we can leave, you know, just an amazing, just path of man, I'm trying to come up with the right word, but positivity, inspiration. And that's what we choose to be and what we choose to do. Joaquin gets those emails, you know, and he sees them. We see them in the awesomeness thread here at Carrot and how we've consciously made that decision on how to run business and run life. We're not perfect, but that's our aim. So, Joaquin, man, any parting words, on this episode of the Carrot Cast to honor your uncle, and also just on this topic, what are some things that you would love for people to take away from this episode?
Yeah. The what came to mind real quick, and I think this is awesome, what to speak about legacy, what it means to make sure you to build your legacy, build your building the biggest. Teach others how to build their big their building to even be bigger than yours. Mm-hmm. And that really came full circle, which was healing for my family of at the funeral, there's maybe 1,200 people packed. Standing room only in the church, and then the room next to us where they're streaming it, that was standing room only. And it blew my mind. I'm seeing the high school kids and wearing their track jerseys, paying their specs, and this is where I'm like, holy crap, he meant a lot. There's I think maybe 6 to 10 men in their 60s, late 60s, wearing these purple jackets. I was like, okay, what's this? I'm not making connection. And then as the service is going on, they had special guests, and they point out to these men in these purple track jackets. It was his teammates from 1960s at his high school came to show up. They sang the alma mater, and it's like, damn.
Really? Oh, geez. That's got to give you chills, man, in that moment. That's crazy. It was
beautiful, though. The idea of, like, that's legacy.
Yep.
I had one of his patients after service come up. They thought I was son, which is funny because there's like a good couple inches difference between us. That matter. But one of his patients, I didn't know this woman. She's like, your uncle meant a lot to me, or your dad, but your uncle. And I just want to say thank you. He was an amazing doctor to me. Mm. And for a perfect stranger to say that, that's a beautiful place to share gratitude. And I'd say that's what leaving a legacy is about, to bring other people up. And my takeaway from this, and I try to practice this as best as I can every day, share gratitude about a person before it's too late. And they, you know, give flowers while they're still around. Don't wait till the funeral or something like that to give someone some flowers. Mm. So,
dude, that's big right there. And I want people to do that. That's the number one action item for you guys for this week in the CareCast, is I want you to do exactly what Joaquin said there. I identify someone right now, today, before you go to bed, and I want you to visualize that person, picture them right now, someone that you maybe haven't said those words to them that you know that you want to or should say, or the person that you haven't called, your mom, your dad, your brother, your sister, a friend of yours, your wife, your husband, whatever it is. Say those words, have those conversations, show your gratitude, and I want you guys to report back to us how that feels, and keep doing that every single week. So shoot us an email, support@carrot.com. Joaquin will see those, support@carrot.com, and let us know what you're taking away from this episode. And let us know also, did you take that action? Did you go out there and pay that gratitude to someone that you have not done so lately before it's too late? Guys and gals, I appreciate you listening to this episode on the more serious note. But like I said, I think the biggest takeaway here is build people up. Let's build people up, guys. Let's make that our call to arms here at Carrot, is to build people up, is to inspire those who are tearing down to notice how much better life can be and is when you focus on the building up versus the tearing down side of things. And encourage and build up our those around us, our friends, our family, our team members, our children, and make sure that we're really creating those healthy habits, so we're not breeding people ourselves or people that we know, or especially our children, who will end up being on the giving end of some of the cyberbullying in 10 or 20 years. I think that'd be the worst nightmare possible, that that my own children would be ones who would be doing that. So I'm going to be doing everything in my power to make sure that they know that's not right, and that they'll be building up as they go. So Joaquin, man, I appreciate the heck out of you and coming on and sharing the story of your uncle. And we'll definitely get you back on the Carrot Cast sometime soon, man. And whether it's a real estate topic, lead gen topic, whatever it is, but I love your energy. We might dive into some of the NLP stuff you're doing, dude. That stuff's fascinating.
Oh, it's a treat what I've been learning and starting to implement. That'd be fun to share that stuff.
I love it. Cool. Well, guys, go to takingoffthearmor.com, and check out Dr. Frank May's legacy. Contribute to AltaMed there in East LA. And Joaquin, thank you very much for hopping on the CareCast, man. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you.
Thank you.